As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, welcome back to another installment of the Wide Ride Podcast. I'm Manny Navarro, Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. Once again, joined by Carlos Ledo of the MIA All Day Podcast. It is Wednesday, March 6th, right around 2 p.m. Carlos, we are two practices in to spring football, and I've got to tell you, I'm super impressed with Cam Ward and how much he looks like a real quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's a strange way to phrase it. Like, I did you anticipate him being like sort of a rubber doll out there, or like a blow up doll, he just uncrated and threw out there on the field, kind of like a robot?
Well, I guess
now I've thrown myself off. Now I'm imagining Johnny Five from Short Circuit with a Hurricanes helmet on, dropping back to pass.
Well, I guess for me, having been through the Tate Martell era, right, when we heard all this stuff about how incredible Tate Martell was and this and that, knowing Cam Ward is making over $1 million to play quarterback at Miami, I guess I was like worried that we were going to show up and he was going to look really bad. And it's the complete opposite. Like, he's really, really good. And he throws nothing but dimes. And again, look, these guys are in shorts, right? They're not playing with defensive line pressure. This is just throwing the football around. But the guy looks the part. He's 6'2", a legit 225. You know, seems to have, you know, pushed all the right buttons in the locker room, inviting guys over to his house to watch the Super Bowl, taking the offensive line out to eat. It seems like he's the real deal. And I think, you know, for any Miami fans who were worried, hey, what does Cam Ward really look like? After two practices and watching seven periods, I feel like they got a real quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, all reports are that's true. We knew that was going to be the case coming in from Washington State. He has tape that shows you that he's a legit quarterback. It's good to see him doing it down here. To me, the more impressive thing, or the more sort of uplifting thing going into the season, is the connection he's trying to establish with his teammates, with that offense, you know, inviting that offensive line out to eat, bringing you guys over to his house, really establishing the personal connection, which I think from a leadership standpoint was something that was lacking from Tyler Van Dyke while he was here. Yeah, he was close to Xavier Restrepo. He might have had one or two guys on the team that he was really cool with, but outside of that, he really didn't build any of those bonds with that team, with his teammates, or be that vocal leader that you expect out of the quarterback position, which I think at the end of the day, it there goes the first shot in a long time. it ends up hurting you as a team, because when he does need to be vocal, or when things do go wrong, and he's the cause of those things going wrong, those guys are less likely to lift him up and less likely to be in his corner, right? They're more likely to turn to the guy that's behind them, maybe, that they have a better relationship with, maybe like Jake Garcia a couple of years ago, they felt more comfortable with. So to me, it's good to see Cam Ward, you know, extending himself to his teammates, trying to build that relationship, trying to build that bond, showing that he's not just there for a paycheck, that he's there to be a leader, that he's there to be part of the team, to really bring that family atmosphere together and that brotherhood, which you need. If you're going to follow a guy into battle, into combat, and yes, this isn't real war, but football's as close as you can get to, you know, putting your life on the line and risking bodily injury and harm to yourself in this gladiatorial sport outside of war. You know, you need someone you can trust and someone that you feel confident in leading you and someone that you feel a connection with. You're not going to run through a wall for some guy you don't like or barely know, right? You're going to do that for a guy that you feel confident and trust and that you really feel like you have a strong connection and bond with.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, for all the conversation we had about how close Tyler Van Dyke and Xavier Restrepo were when they were together here with the Hurricanes. Restrepo kind of had a funny line today in the interviews. I don't know if you saw his interviews or not, but he basically was asked about Tyler, and he says, "Yeah, well, you know, he's not my girlfriend." You know, in other words, like, yeah, he was my previous quarterback, but you know, we weren't in love. I didn't have to follow him to Wisconsin. I was, you know, very happy here, doing my own thing. And I think early on, one of the pluses I think you can clearly see, and again, we're not watching all of practice, we're getting to watch seven periods, but Cam Ward and Xavier Restrepo have a real chemistry throwing the football, twice now, once on each day. Xavier Restrepo has run a 40 to 50 yard pass pattern down the field, caught the ball with just ridiculous sort of artistry, you know, falling down, twisting, converting his body to get past Mitch Powell and to make a great grab on a throw from Cam Ward, where really the coverage was excellent and the catch was excellent. And you're just like, this is high level football. Like, this is really, really impressive. And so to me, like, you need your best players to play their best, to play at an elite level. And twice now in two practices, I've seen Cam Ward and Xavier Restrepo look like, you know, as good a combo I've seen at Miami in the last 20 years.
Yeah, your best guys aren't always going to run by, the DBs. They're not always going to break wide open. There's not always going to be a huge window to throw the football. Sometimes you got to throw guys open or throw the ball in a position or in a spot where the receiver is the only one that can make a play on it, right? Because the coverage is going to be good, but you want to go to your guy. You want to find the guy that's going to make the play. You know, Randy Moss didn't make himself famous just by running pass dudes. I mean, we call it mossing people for a reason, right?
Right.
So you've got to throw the ball in an area and a location where the receiver is the be has the best chance to make a play, and you let him go do his thing. And I think that's something also that was lacking. You know, if Tyler didn't throw it on the money, his ball location sometimes wasn't great. He was good at back shoulder throws, but not necessarily leading guys open. And I think Cam Ward's going to bring that element, like you're talking about. And I think it's good to see that he and Xavier Restrepo are developing that bond. But it's easy to develop a bond with a guy that gets open and catches the ball, right? A guy that does what he needs to do, puts his body on the line, sacrifices it to make sure he comes down with a catch. So I think that's one of the reasons why there's that bond. It's hard not to have that with Xavier Restrepo. And it's great to see him taking his game up to another level and hopefully continuing to do that with Cam Ward. You know, hopefully the rest of the receivers fall in line and Cam develops some sort of rapport with them as well. And he makes them better as well, putting the ball in positions where only a Jacoby George can go get it, or Isaiah Horton, or maybe Josiah Trader.
We're going to talk more about Cam Ward in a few minutes. I just want to tease some other stuff we're going to discuss on the show today. Number one, we've got a mailbag. We've got several questions you guys have sent in. So I appreciate you guys always sending in the mailbag stuff, allowing us to hit on different topics. We're going to talk about defensive backs. I think that's the one position early on in camp that I look at and I say, maybe they need to go shopping this spring for some more guys at those
Yeah, what
spots.
aisle do they have those on in Publix?
Yeah, they got them somewhere in the NIL,
Or
whatever
do
they
they have to
call
go
it,
to
the
like
NIL version of Publix.
we have to go to Aldi, or we have to go somewhere else instead of Publix to find those?
Yeah,
Trader Joe's.
we'll talk a little bit about some injuries. I'll get to that in a second here. The offensive line, you know, we're talking about left guard and right tackle, right, with Francis Maigo out this spring. We'll talk about some of the guys that are there. And like I said, we'll get to the mailbag. But Carlos, let's continue the conversation on Cam Ward for a second. We got a chance to talk to Shannon Dawson today. And one of the questions that I asked him, two of the more interesting questions for me, because they were my questions, two of more the interesting questions for me coming into this camp were, one, what is he going to do about Cam Ward's fumbles, right? Cam Ward has a history of fumbles, fumbled it 46 times when he was at Washington State. I think he had a four fumble game against Colorado State one time, three fumbles in another game. Shannon Dawson, when I asked him the question, said number one, he'd studied all 46 of those fumbles on video, and that as the doctor that he is, the offensive doctor that he is, that it's not necessarily a ball protection problem for Cam Ward. Which, you know, ball protection, whenever I bring that up, it's very important to men. But ball protection, as in covering up the ball and making sure people are knocking it out, that's not the issue. It's a focus issue. So when you hear that as a former quarterback, what does that mean to you?
It means that he just contradicted himself with that statement, right? Think about it. So the reason why he's fumbling is because he's not focusing as they're coming and they're ripping the ball at him, which means he's not protecting the ball properly, right? Because if he was focused, he would be protecting the ball properly. So it is a ball protection issue. And as we know, Manny, that's principle. That's A number one. You got to protect those balls at all costs, right? Whatever it takes. If it's your BBDs or your Fruit of the Looms, your Hanes, you got to get those things in order. Make sure they're nice and snug, comfy, and ready for the rolling. But yeah, that makes absolutely no sense to me. He lacked focus, and that's why he fumbled. But the reason why he fumbled was because he wasn't protecting the football because he lacked focus. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, Shannon Dawson, God, this guy, he's so frustrating and upsetting. It's like, dude, we could have like a whole Seinfeld episode about what this guy's just euphemisms.
I probably have to go through and watch all 46 of Cam Ward's fumbles to
And let's get to that for a second. You really believe this dude watched all 46 fumbles?
He says
Can
he did. He says he did
imagine.
that that was the red flag coming in with getting Ward, and he had to review it before they signed off on him. I'd like to know, was it he was being careless as he runs with the football? Was it be other players just making great
And
plays?
all
Yeah.
46 fumbles were a lack of focus, right?
Right.
It's possible that maybe one, just slipped out of his hands accidentally, or it was a bad snap. Right? Because that can't happen. That counts as a fumble against him. If a
Right.
snap hits his hands and it fumbles, then he turns it over. That could be maybe not a lack of focus. It could be the center snapped it early. To me, that's a crap answer. It is impossible that all 46 were a lack of focus. And if they are, Manny, if they are, if this guy fumbled 46 times because he was unfocused, then this guy should not be the starting quarterback at the University of Miami because he is not capable of holding enough attention. He's too unfocused to read a defense and throw the football where it needs to go. Right? Or
Yeah.
understand a playbook. He lacks the focus because how the hell do you fumble 46 times just on lack of focus?
Well, whatever the case is, I gave you Shannon Dawson's answer. I appreciate you chewing it, masticating on it, and giving us your hot fire in response to his answer. The other important question I asked him is, Cam Ward scored 8 rushing touchdowns last season. I mentioned how he led Washington State in rushing in my article for The Athletic, in terms of rushing yardage and rushing attempts. I asked him, how often does he expect Cam Ward to be a part of the running game? And basically his answer was organically. In other words, if the protection breaks down and he needs to take off and run, or there's excellent coverage down the field, he wants Cam Ward to use his legs. But I think that also means there will not be any necessarily designed runs for Cam Ward to take off and run. He probably wants him to turn around and hand the ball off when it comes to running the football.
Yeah, that's exactly what that means. He's not, it sounds like he's not planning on having any sort of zone read schemes in there for him, any, quarterback counters, powers, things where he could utilize him as an extra runner and make the defense play 11 on 11, which to me, if you've got a guy that can move and got a guy that can actually run the football, doesn't mean you have to run him 20 times a game.
Right.
But having those designed plays in there that you could pull out of your back pocket or use a couple times a game in situations where the defense is keying on your running game. To allow yourself to have a little bit more room to breathe when you're trying to open up that running game with the running backs and even open up play action in the passing game is criminal if you don't add that in there with a guy with that kind of talent. Like I said, you want to make the defense play 11 on 11 and account for everyone and not just sit back and key in on the running back and key in on play action. It's just 26 again, man. Shannon Dawson, so frustrating, this dude. You're killing me, Smalls. Like every time you come out here, you say something, or like he expects me again. I'm gonna go back to this again. I'm sorry. Expects me to believe he saw all 46 fumbles, but he took him 3 weeks to sit down Tyler Van Dyke and show him cut-ups of when he was actually playing well, what he's done well, and give him that pep talk. I said, hey, listen, what do you like? What do you feel best running? Like it took him that long to figure that out. My God, this guy organically. What a great answer. Again, look, go to Trader Joe's, man. They got plenty of organic stuff there.
You are not a fan of Shannon Dawson. Is it
Shannon, no, he's
because he
just
has
pissing
your
me off
dream
there.
job? Is that what it is? Is it because he has your dream job being the offensive coordinator
L to the no. Do you know what torture it would be having to be at that facility at like 4, 5 in the morning
You
recruiting
couldn't
my
work for
ass off?
Mario? You couldn't work for Mario?
Hell no, I couldn't work for Mario. I couldn't be there 12, 15-hour days. I couldn't, unless he lets me sit in the back and just smoke cigars and watch TV, then we're cool. Yeah, but I mean, that ain't for me, bro. I'm not out there to be kissing 16 and 17-year-old kids' asses. That's not me.
Hey, a little bonus quarterback news. Dia Bell, Roger Bell's son, was on campus today for the practice, came in to check it out. I watched him throw the ball some on Sunday at the Under Armour Miami camp. Hurricanes are in it for Dia Bell's son, for Dia Bell, Roger Bell's son. I think, you know, he's a standout at Plantation American Heritage. Looks about 2 or 3 inches taller than the last time I saw him. Bigger frame. He's only going to be a junior, so you know, not till the 2026 class, but the kid can throw the rock, Carlos. And we talk about, can Mario recruit, you know, the elite QBs nationally? Can he get them, not just pull them out of the transfer portal like he did here with Cam Ward? And I think Dia Bell is that kind of candidate. So we'll see what happens with his recruitment going forward.
Great
But
pedigree.
yeah, but the Canes are in a good position with a lot of the 2025 and 2026 guys that I've been around in the last week. I drove up to IMG Academy, the five-star offensive tackle in the 2026 class, Kenye Pepe, a kid out of California, talked about Miami. He's 6'9", about almost 300 pounds, and he's freaking 16 years old, Carlos. Okay, this guy is a mountain of a man. He's only a high school sophomore, so hasn't even gotten to his junior year, but a guy that certainly I think has a really good relationship with
Can
Fran.
you imagine having that kid 6'9", 316 as a health teacher in your human growth and development class, and be like, you guys are gonna get older, and this is the kind of stuff you're gonna see. You got this grown ass man sitting front row in your class. You're like, bro, what do I teach you? What is this?
Yeah.
Is I don't, like I'm not a geneticist from Jurassic Park. I have nothing to explain to you.
Well, so he likes the Canes a whole lot. Gavin Nix, who's a 2025 linebacker from ING Academy, all he could do was talk about Derek Nicholson and how what a great bond he has. The Canes are in it for some really good wide receivers as well. Cortez Mills, who I think was one of the best receivers at a kid out of Homestead High in the 2025 cycle, about 6'1", 6'2", 175 pounds, lean, fast, just explosive guy. I think Miami's in good position for him. Amari Wallace, a safety from Miami Central, the 25. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are coming in and visiting campus. Mario Wallace walked by me today, said what's up on his way in. All of these guys are
I heard it was a
high-end.
podcast.
Yeah, he loves the podcast too. All of these guys that they're in on, like the recruiting thing has built some momentum. I think obviously the results this year are going to matter a lot for them. They're going to want to see a 9 to 10 win team at the very least. You know, take that step in year three. But like the fact that Mario now has been down here for, you know, going on 3 years and been able to sort of establish relationships, I think they're ahead of the curve. Whereas before, when they were coming in on guys like Jeremiah Smith and others, they were playing from behind. Guys that had been recruited since the ninth grade, right? These kids are high school sophomores now, about to become juniors and seniors. And Mario Cristobal hasn't been the head coach at Miami since they got into high school. So it's a different sort of relationship that you're able to build. So positive front on the recruiting, you know, positive sort of news on the recruiting front for Miami, I think, was what I can share coming off of those two combines and being around the program these first 2 days. A lot of good players coming down and checking the program out and hoping to see the change that Mario sort of promised. Let's get back to football though for a second, Carlos, and what happened specifically with this team. Mario, when he spoke to the media on Monday, mentioned guys that are banged up or coming off of surgery that should be back at some point this spring. One of them I actually saw today, Akeem Mezador, the defensive lineman, Josh Horton, Cole McConathy. Those are the three defensive linemen that are expected back at some point this spring. Damari Brown, the cornerback, who's probably going to be the number one corner. Brian Balaam, a reserve safety. And then you have Cam McCormick, the ninth year senior at tight end. Those guys should be back at some point. The guys that are 100% out for the entire spring, linebacker Kiki Maanoa, who we know is going to be a fixture in that starting lineup, Mark Fletcher and AJ Allen, the two running backs. Fletcher, we expect to be the number one running back. Safety Isaiah Thomas, the freshman that they got from Clearwater Academy International, the true freshman, he's had a procedure done. Nigel Lee Kelly, who we know missed the second half of last year. Armando Blunt, the true freshman who's only 16, 17 years old as he steps foot on campus. Zion Nelson, again, still on the team, which was more notable. The fact that he actually brought up Zion Nelson tells me he still has a scholarship here. Francis Maui-Noah, who I mentioned, and then Frankie Tinalao, who was part of the 2023 cycle, the kid from Australia that they got that's the big offensive lineman. So those guys are all out for the people who are wondering. We had teased about it. There were a bunch of guys that I couldn't even talk about yet because I wasn't sure whether or not they'd miss the whole spring. Well, there's your update from the head coach passing the info to you. Any of those injuries concerning to you, or you're like me that you think, hey, missing the spring is no big deal?
You know, springtime is the time the guys get tune-ups, right? They clean stuff up, they get those nagging injuries taken care of. There's no need to put them through a full spring practice if it's unnecessary, and if it's better to get them healthy and ready for the regular season, because you're not winning anything in the spring. They'll have plenty of time to prove themselves over the summer in workouts, and once fall camp begins, they'll have plenty of opportunities to get reps in and try and earn playing time. But right now, you know, now's the time to get healthy. Now's the time to fix your body and be the best version you could be, because what you want to do is be at 100% come August 31st.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
One thing I heard that was interesting, we've interviewed, I think, six players and two coaches to this point, Cristobal and Shannon Dawson. We spoke to Restrepo today, Jalen Rivers on Monday, Inez Cooper today, Ruben Bain, Wesley Bissain, Daryl Porter Jr., among the players that we've had a chance to speak with so far early in camp. One thing that was interesting to me, Ruben Bain said he had a conversation with Alonzo Highsmith before Alonzo Highsmith left to go join the New England Patriots. And he mentioned how Highsmith talked about how he needed to improve his body. You know, Ruben Bain is a guy who really is about 6'2 and a half, 6'3, 280 pounds. Ruben talked about how he knows he needs to get stronger and improve his stamina, you know, so that he can play more snaps and be able to last the whole season. I think he's said he trimmed about 4% body fat and about 8 pounds off of his body. So improvement from Ruben Bain, which is what you want to see, right, from your best players physically. I know that's something that people always ask about, Manny. How do they look physically? So I can report that Miami's best player has done a good job in this offseason fixing his body. And I got to say, the one guy who really, really impressed me, Carlos, that I saw physically that I was like, wow, he looks different, Zay Horton, who's basically taking over that outside receiver job for Colby Young. You know, physically, he looks much more buff and just ready to sort of be a starter in the lineup. Changes number. He's wearing number 2 now. So, you know, when they change jersey numbers, that means the coaching staff has to sign off on that, right? When they give him one of those low numbers, like, hey, you got to really be good to earn it. So, you know, sort of promising signs early on, things I just wanted to bring up to you to get your reaction.
Yeah, if you saw Isaiah Horton with like number 96, you'd think, man, don't expect too much from this guy coming into the season. But number 2, all right, he's doing something, which is nice. I mean, you know, Colby Young was a thicker guy at receiver. If Isaiah Horton can match that body type and add a little bit more explosiveness, a little bit more speed, a little bit more consistency with the hands, that'd be fantastic. You're not losing anything then out the outside. And then you bring on in those other young guys like a Josiah Trader, you know, Ray Armstrong, all the other guys coming in. Hopefully that receiver room is a plus, a net plus, instead of a negative with Colby Young on.
Yeah, and I'll say this for the freshmen, right? Nykar and JoJo Trader have both looked the part so far. I've seen them toast some DBs in coverage. In fact, JoJo Trader, I think, ran right past Jadis Richard, caught a ball in stride down the sideline for a touchdown today. And yeah, he looks every bit the part. Nye Carr had a couple of nice grabs watching him today. So I think both of those freshmen are legitimately in position to help Miami. You know, guys that enrolled early and maybe by the fall, they are legitimate, you know, fifth, sixth guys in the rotation who come in and catch a ball, score a touchdown here or there, do what kind of Zay Horton did, right? Would be that fifth guy that Miami needed a year ago. Behind Rashard Smith and Kobe Young and Xavier Restrepo and Jacoby George. So I think, you know, those guys are primed and ready. And I'll say this, I think Bobby Washington has flashed at times. Robbie Washington, the receiver, is another guy who has flashed at times. Ray Joseph, again, these are guys that are redshirt freshmen, right? Coming off of last year, going into their second season, they look better. Carlos, you see improvement in that receiver room. And I would say so far, that's been the most impressive unit to me. And we kind of had a feeling coming in the preseason it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a lot of young talent. The question was development. And I think with the loss of Kobe Young and Rashard Smith, there's opportunities for these young guys to get more reps and get more opportunities and get more balls thrown their way, right? And I think Ray Armstrong, specifically with the loss of Rashard Smith, Ray Ray Armstrong. I'm out here talking about a guy who was here, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Ray Ray Armstrong. James Williams was the poor man's Ray Ray Armstrong. I'll just throw it out. Now people are going to get so pissed. So, you know, for him, for Ray Ray Joseph, I think it's a great opportunity to step into that Rashard Smith role. And I think it's a role that should be expanded this year, you know, and do a little bit of what they did towards the end of the season with Rashard Smith. Put him in the backfield, move him around, get him the ball in space, allow him to make plays, do some punt returning, do some kick returning, just get him the ball in a way where he could just make plays, right? And be that sort of, you know, speed guy that can make things happen for this offense in an instant and break a game wide open.
Yeah.
And the other guys have loads of talent, man, and there's opportunity. There's opportunity not only because these guys left, but because, you know, Jacoby George, like we talked about last week, people got pissed off at us because we said that he was a penalty monster and he was costing the team, and it only happened a couple of times at the end of the year. And what are we talking about? Listen, if a guy's habits are leading him to negative results and they only continue to get worse or continue to happen more frequently, you have to look at replacing that guy and doing what's best for the team overall, right? And from what we've seen from Jacoby George, not just during the regular season, but offseason choices, his decision-making isn't the best. And you need a guy to be able to get his shit right, get his head right, and be out there and be a positive influence on this team, not a net negative. And if he's going to be a net negative, then there's going to be more snaps for other guys behind him. Now, I don't hate Jacoby George. I've got nothing against him. Personally, I think he's a great player. He's amazingly talented. And he can do amazing things when he's focused and right. Now, can he come into the season and be that guy full time? Hopefully. If not, there's other guys behind them to push him to do so.
Carlos, I will not allow this Jacoby George slander. Slander is what our readers say, listeners say. All right, let's get to the mailbag because I know it's going to lead us into some other topics. The only other thing I wanted to say, Samson Okanlola ran with the first team at left guard on Monday. Today, I know this is going to anger Miami's fan base. Today, the first team left guard and inside run drills was Lou Cristobal. Lou Cristobal.
Nepo baby.
Yes. So we will see what happens going forward. He was asked, Susan Miller-Degnan of the Miami Herald asked about Lou Cristobal playing left guard. And Shannon Dawson's response was, he can do it. So.
Hey, listen, let me tell you, man. Shannon Dawson is stealing these press conferences. Mario better watch out. This guy's ability to form a cohesive thought and really give you in-depth analysis with these answers is just mind-boggling. This guy's the shit. This guy's amazing.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. This is from our buddy Larry Schender from Miami Media Associates. Do you see a point where we use four wide receivers with Ray Ray and JoJo on the field at the same time with Xavier? Last year, I don't think Dawson used enough of the wide receiver room. Was that a scheme issue or wide receivers weren't ready? I'd love to see JoJo and Nye get some burn this year. Larry, I think the only way we see that, where you see the two where you see JoJo and Ray Ray on the field is if,
and Nye Carr too, or
Nye Carr, right? Like if you're going to see that, there's probably some injuries. I just think Mario, listen, he's not afraid to play freshman. He's just not going to lean on them. Right. And I think this is the year where Xavier Restrepo, Jacoby George, and Zay Horton are your clear cut first three. And then, you know, you have JoJo potentially, you know, getting some burn maybe on the outside when one of those guys needs a breather. You could see Nykar's been playing on the outside so far, by the way. He has not been in the slot. You've seen a lot of Robbie Washington and Ray Ray in the slot. So I'll say this too. I asked Mario about the tight end position, and obviously Elijah Arroyo is out there. He's got a big, you know, knee brace on. He's out there practicing. Mario said yesterday, or Monday rather, that nobody has shown more improvement considering everything they've been through in the last 2 years than Elijah Arroyo physically. Talking to other people there, a lot of people have said Arroyo looks the part. So the tight end position, especially for recruiting purposes and just brand purposes, cannot be ignored this year. They cannot be targeted 30 times. I suspect we will see more of the tight end in this offense. So that may prevent more four wide receiver sets.
Well, you saw plenty of the tight end last year. The only thing was the tight end was ineffective in the passing game. He was just a net zero, right? Which was also a terrible internet company, if you had that back in the day. But yeah, I think, Larry, to your question about four wide receiver sets, I think that was more of a schematic thing in terms of what their identity on offense, what they wanted to be. Ideally, they want to be an 11 personnel, 12 personnel type team, which means, you know, one back, one tight end, one back, two tight ends. That's what they like to run. I think they should go a little bit more four wide. I think they need to be a little bit more versatile on offense, like we've talked about lots on the podcast.
Yep.
You know, stress teams with different formations, different sets, personnel groupings and motions. That's what you do as an offense to keep teams off balance. You could literally run the same play 15 different ways just by changing personnel, formation groupings, and alignment in terms of how you run your formations. So you don't have to have a huge playbook in terms of the amount of plays you run. You just should have a lot of depth in terms of how you get to those plays, right? And how you align for those plays. So if you do that, you could always keep a defense off balance. So hopefully that's something that they evolve with. And yes, I am as well concerned about the tight end position. You could say that he looks great until bullets start flying and things are real and we can see what he's doing out there on the field. If he could actually start catching balls and making plays, you know, Elijah Arroyo is still a question.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This question comes from Jason J-Cord 57 on Twitter. Is the receiver room getting a boost because of the state of the cornerback room? Are they just that good? A mixture of both? And is cornerback transfer definitely needed? I'll just answer that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Look, I've sat there and watched and commented with other writers. We all feel like they need another cornerback. We all feel like they have to go shopping at the end of the spring and bring in somebody else. Now, is it going to look as bad as it's looked so far? Is it because the receivers are elite? That's a tough question to answer. I'll say this, and I said this earlier. Like a lot of the throws have been phenomenal. Like Reese Poffenbarger has looked really good throwing the ball too. Emery Williams, who's back, right? We thought, hey, maybe he'll miss the spring as he recovers from his broken left arm. He's out there throwing the football. Ja'Cari Brown was throwing some lasers today in one-on-one stuff. Like, to me, the quarterback room really looks good early on in camp. So I think part of this could be the fact that, you don't have Damari Brown out there, right? He's dinged up, coming off surgery. So you're missing one of your two best corners. And B, like, these guys have been doing 7-on-7 work. Like, the quarterbacks are out there throwing all the time. They're ready. It's almost like pitchers, right, in the beginning of spring training. In baseball, like, the pitchers usually come in and they're in a little bit better position than the hitters are because the hitters haven't seen live pitching for a while. The pitchers, meanwhile, are throwing bullpens and getting their arms ready, and they're out there and they're ready to go. So the pitching sometimes at the beginning of spring training can look great if guys are in great shape. I think it's the same sort of thing here. That said, yes, I agree. They have to go out and probably find a cornerback. And I'll say this for today. There are only three scholarship cornerbacks on the field. Darryl Porter Jr., Jadis Richard, and Demetrius Freeney. Carlos, you remember Demetrius Freeney?
No, but I know Dwight Freeney.
Demetrius Freeney was a late addition, the kid from California that they added to the 2023 class. Didn't play a snap last year. Those have been your cornerbacks. Everybody else has been safety with Lance Guidry. So the new cornerbacks coach who came over from Marshall, what's his name again? I'm forgetting his name again. Jesus.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy, Miami cornerback. I got to do the search. Oh, and it's so funny.
I'm drawing a blank too, so I know I'm no help right now.
No, he came over from Marshall. Chevis Jackson, sorry. And I pictured him in my mind since I shot so much video today of him. You know, he's got a much smaller room right now on the field, right, in terms of position groups than Lance Guidry. Lance Guidry is really getting a lot of the safeties work, and notably so, because that's a position where you got to replace two starters, right? So the safeties right now, the guys who were out there at practice today, Jaden Harris, Mish Powell, Savion Riley, Markeith Williams, Isaiah Taylor, who of course is Jason Taylor's son, Zaquan Patterson, the freshman, and Dylan Day. So you've got 10 scholarship DBs out there between those two positions. Like, it's going to look better eventually. But I think right now, early on, if you were to ask me, put a gun to my head, yeah, I think they got to go out and get another DB this spring.
Yeah, they definitely got to go out and get another DB, another corner. But I also think things will look a lot different, or at least a little bit different, when it's 11 on 11, right? When you're out there scrimmaging and the defense could actually bring pressure with that defensive line. Yeah. And that's going to cause throws to be made quicker, decisions to be made quicker. There, the DBs will be in a better position because of that. The defensive line will help a lot. The linebackers will help as well. So schematically, once the 11-on-11 gets thrown out there in the scrimmage, it's going to be a little bit different on both sides.
Andrew V asks, what have been some of the good and bad surprises so far in spring practices? I guess that would be it. Just the fact that the receivers have looked so good and the DBs have been shaky. I guess I was... And I don't know that it's necessarily a surprise. We had a feeling the DBs would be a little off, but, you know, in terms of talking points early on, like just shorts and helmets, like this is all I can really give you, right? Like Cam Ward, again, the quarterbacks have been money on a lot of the throws. There have not been many throws that were off target. So maybe that's the position that's a pleasant surprise. This is Myrick McCray, MJ McCray on Twitter. There's a term called Green Tree All-American, coined by the West End Zone message board. It would be for a player who broke out during spring, but production fizzled on the field. What player will break out this spring, but produce on the field this season? Who will break out? I think JoJo Trader. I think he's going to be a guy that consistently in camp impresses, and probably in the spring game, and I think it'll carry over into the fall. I think I'm just trying to rack my brain here, going through guys that'll actually make an impact. I think
Isaiah Horton.
Yeah, Zay Horton. I mean, he's already kind of moved into that role. It's hard. It's so early. I think it's a better question, Myrick, if you give me an opportunity to watch these guys in pads, where it's more meaningful than just
or
right
after
now.
Scrimmage one to see the performances, right?
Right, right. I think that's probably something, you know, early on that we'll be able to tell after we see the real thing in a scrimmage or in pads. This is from Randall Carlson. Where is Miami at with total scholarships? Will they need to lose some kids in the spring portal? I think they already are. I think there's some guys that are probably on their way out the door. We told you guys not to worry about it. It's 85, right? And Miami will do what needs to be done. And ultimately, I don't think there's going to be any major losses here. You know, if somebody gets sent packing, they get sent packing because they can't play here. I think that's probably what happens. Samuel Dumarque says, what are some things this year that has surprised you compared to last year this time? Just the fact that the offense looks so good, right? I think in years past, Tyler Van Dyke was okay. You know, he would do okay in camp. The receivers would be okay. But this is like exceptional right now. Like the catches that Restrepo, it's like another level. It's another level of performance. Like you can just see the difference, Carlos. I don't know. I mean, have you remember me talking about a quarterback and receiver like this before at the start of camp?
No, but then again, I really don't remember what I ate for breakfast. So, but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, just seeing the clips of Cam Ward throwing the football, the ones that you put up there, it's impressive the way the ball comes off his hand.
Flicks it. He just like flicks it.
And it comes off powerful and accurate. You know, there's one clip where he was running a drill where he was sort of backing up to one side and threw it just with a flick of the wrist at a net and into the square from like 20 yards away. And that was just impressive to me, because to be accurate as you're backpedaling away and your body momentum is going in a different direction from where you're throwing the football, and to throw it with force and accuracy the way he did, it's something small, but it's really impressive. So, you know, I think, like you said, one of the reasons probably why the DBs are struggling is because he's putting the ball in positions where only the receivers can get to them, and the receivers are actually going out there and making the plays. Yeah. So that's another thing. He's elevating the play of the receivers by giving them more opportunities to go out there and make plays. So I think it's all related to the addition of Cam Ward. The other guys know they have to step up to be on par to be ready to back him up. And I think it just helps the offense as a whole.
This is an interesting one. This is from Miami Hurricanes enthusiast. What position groups are top 10 in the country? I think Cam Ward has the potential to be a top 10 quarterback in the country. I think Xavier Restrepo has a chance to be a top 10 receiver in college this coming season.
He could be a top 10 slot guy,
I think Jalen Rivers has a chance to be a top 10 offensive tackle. I think Inez Cooper has a chance to be a top 10 guard, pulling guard. I think Reuben Bain has a chance to be a top 10 defensive lineman in the country, regardless of edge or inside. I think Francis Mauinoa has a chance to be a top 10 linebacker in the country, maybe an all ACC first team linebacker this year. You know, that's probably it, right? When I look at it, and
I think Akeem Mesidor.
I mean, if he's healthy, right? I think Akeem Mesidor potentially with the kind of output maybe that you're hoping for. But that's it. I don't know that there is a position group. I think there's individuals. And I think that should tell you, as a Miami fan, how far away this program really is to still becoming elite. That you may have some major individuals that are coming up the ranks. But I had this conversation with Gary Furman from Canesport today. To me, this narrative that Miami has always had talent, Carlos, it cracks me up. Like the fact that people can sit here with a straight face, knowing Miami's NFL draft history and just looking at NFL rosters right now, to say, well, Miami's still getting talent. It's not nearly the same level of what it was when this program was winning championships. And it's a joke. So for people to say, oh, Miami still has really good players, like, no. Just count first round picks. Just count Pro Bowlers.
Dude, just look at the results, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many coaches over the last 20 years have walked through this door, come in expecting that they've got this beautiful bounty of talent laying at their feet, that they're immediately going to turn this thing around because the guy before them was an idiot and didn't know how to utilize these guys properly? And what do they end up doing? More mediocrity, right?
Yeah.
So even Mario walked in here thinking he was going to be a little bit more successful than he was and got slapped in the face with 5-7, right?
Yep.
So something has to give. It can't be every coach that walks in here sucks. Every coach that's ever been hired here in the last 20 years doesn't know what they're doing. There has to be something, some sort of disconnect with the players in terms of their talent level, their effort level, and their development. All those things play a factor into it. But you still need the coaching to be able to be elite. Because I can tell you what, if you get to a position or a situation where you are now back at the top of college football in terms of talent level, you're going to have to out-scheme some teams then. Because when you're playing at Georgia, you're playing Alabama, you're playing these top-notch teams in Michigan, you're going to have to knuckle up and beat them physically, but you're also going to have to come up with a scheme to beat them as well, because the talent's going to be equal.
Yeah. Couple more questions here, Carlos, and we'll wrap up. This is from Sam Dumarque. Physically, how has the body types changed since last year, and what positions do you feel still need upgrading? Sam, I kind of touched on this.
Look, Manny and I, our body types are looking good. I think you know, Manny's lost some weight. He's looking good.
Yeah,
I'm trying to lose some weight.
Yeah,
tax season stress is killing me.
What positions still need upgrading? I think certainly defensive back. I mean, it's hard to tell at running back. I know that running back's position, maybe they would be interested in adding if they could get an experienced guy. I don't know. Right now, it's too early, but DB, I think, for sure. Brent Peterson asks, what is Mario Dawson saying about getting the tight ends involved in the offense? I said it earlier. Mario said on Monday that they got to do a better job of getting the ball to the tight ends and scheming it up. So,
and when they asked Shedden Dawson, he said yes. That was his in-depth answer. Yes.
Yes. Sam Knowlton asks, who will have their own Tober this year? We had Greg Tober and Bane Tober. So who's next? Another freshman lineman who gets six sacks that month. I don't know that there's a freshman lineup lineman right now that can come in and do that, because I think they got a lot of older guys that look pretty good. I thought Jared Harrison Hunt, and who was it? I'm gonna tell you right now who was on the defensive line first team today. Elijah Alston, the transfer from Marshall, Jared Harrison Hunt, Thomas Gore, and Reuben Bain were your starting four. Again, no Nigel Lee Kelly. Akeem Mesidor isn't back. I just don't know that the opportunities are there on this defensive line for a freshman to have some outstanding October. The linebackers, by the way, were Wesley Besanth, Raul Aguirre, and Bobby Pruitt, the freshman. He's in there getting some work with the first team defensive line and linebackers. So front seven. So yeah, that's that question. And we'll get to the last one here, Carlos. No, that was it. That was it. We're out of questions. Anything
right,
else?
I got one.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So going back to Rajah Bell and his son, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna flip the script a little bit. Who are the top five South Florida high school basketball players that you ever witnessed?
Oh, wow. Going back a ways here. Well, I think most of them played at Miami High. You're one of your alma maters there. For me personally, when I covered the high schools, I don't know why this name is hitting me. Ray Shipman is a guy that I think of that went to Monsignor Pace in the mid to early 2000s. That kid was a really, really good player at Pace. You know, some other guys from Northwest Christian over the years.
Eddie House was really
good. Yeah.
Eddie Moore, not Eddie House. Jesus Christ. Eddie, what was his name?
Are you thinking of Edwin Rios?
Edwin Rios was another guy, but
Dwayne
Collins. To me,
Brian Asbury.
Oh yeah, he was great. I'm gonna go back a little bit further back. Okeel Swaby, that went to UCF. Well. That dude was a baller. Mm-hmm. Rajah Bell, of course. That's what brought it to mind. Charlie Miller.
Yep, South
amazing.
Miami.
Yep. South Miami. So was Luke Barnes at South Miami. Man.
Well. The kid who played for the Mavericks all those years that went to Miami Christian, the point guard who was. He beat the Heat in the finals with Dirk Nowitzki.
J.J. Barea.
J.J. Barea. He played at Miami Christian. I mean, look, we've had some really good basketball players come through South Florida for sure. You know, Doug Edwards, his brother.
Both brothers, Alan and Steve.
Alan Edwards, Steve Edwards. There's so many good ones.
Corey Lewis, Tim James.
Yeah, Tim James is a good one. James Jones. From American High, played in the NBA for many years. I mean, there's, you have a big collection there, man. I don't know. At some point, I have to sit down and do a top five. But I appreciate you bringing up basketball.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. One of the guys that was most impressive that I got to see in person, and it wasn't impressive because he was physically impressive. It was just impressive what he was doing. Was Teddy Dupe?
Yes. Yes.
I got to see Teddy Dupe play against Miami High, and I got to see him, before that, like playing against somebody else for a tournament. That dude was like 5 foot nothing.
Right,
and he was bombing it from like half court, and
he
nothing
could
shoot
but the rock, man. He could shoot
dude,
the rock.
Guy was unbelievable. It got to the point where Miami High had to put Cedric Irvin on him to shut him down. Cedric Irvin, who played in the NFL for a long time, played at Michigan State at running back, wasn't a great basketball player, but when Frank Barden wanted to shut somebody down, he'd throw Cedric on the court and say, hey, lock that guy up. And once he did that, Teddy got shut down.
The best player I saw play high school basketball in South Florida,
Sylvia Fowles. Okay. Yeah, she was pretty nasty.
She and probably a WNBA Hall of Famer, and I mean Olympic gold medalist. I think of all the people who have come out of South Florida in the last 25 years, she was the best.
Wow. Great call by you. This is why you're the journalist. And this is why I'm the moron that just sits back and cherry picks.
Thank you for listening to Wide Right. Make sure that you check out Carlos and the MIA All Day podcast. You still got those shirts selling, brother?
Yeah, look, I got one on right now. Check it out. Look.
All right.
All day. New designs. I threw some up on Twitter the other day. I'm going to be having those available. If you want to hit, if you want some, hit me up. DM me. I'll let you know how to get some. I'm going to have some more designs coming up soon. I'll have one specific designer, maybe two, for the Gator game. Right before that, I'll release it like in July.
Nice, nice. I gotta start looking for my hotel slash Airbnb up in Gainesville. I'm probably gonna hit a couple practices in Gainesville, FSU, USF. I gotta the tour. I gotta make
the
tour.
I bet you're gonna hit some practices in Tallahassee.
Bring my FSU hat to get everybody all excited. Yeah.
And the Airbnb in Gainesville, what are you gonna do? You're gonna sleep on a log next to the frog. you're gonna sing Rainbow Connection together.
That's Carlos Leza of the MIA All Day Pod. I'm Manny Navarro of The Athletic. We will see you soon.
Peace.